ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Have you tried to negotiate work from home conditions? How did it pan out for you? Some employers have been refusing employees' requests for flexible work, but a Westpac worker with parental responsibilities was recently awarded the right to work from home 5 days a week by the Fair Work Commission. What does this mean for you? Hello, I'm Lisa Leong for ABC Radio National's This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. In this episode, we're looking at how this decision could affect flexible working conditions that might be given to parents and carers in the future. Are we heading towards more flexible work or less? Dr. Giuseppe Carabetta is an Associate Professor of Workplace and Business Law with the UTS Business School. Hi, Giuseppe.
Hi, Lisa. How are you doing?
Good. Well, Giuseppe, before we get into the details of this decision, not everyone can request to work flexibly, willy-nilly. What are some of the key conditions that need to be met?
Okay, well, under the National Employment Standards, so the general standards, we've got particular categories, and you need to either be a parent with school-age children or younger, or a carer, or a worker with a disability, or a person aged at least 55 years, mm-hmm. or pregnant, or somebody who's sadly faced domestic or family violence or is caring for someone who has done so. And there's a qualifying period of 12 months. It extends also to casuals, but only where they can establish a kind of a regular and continuous expectation regarding work.
Okay, let's talk through the circumstances of the Fair Work's Westpac decision. Can you take us through it?
So we had a long-standing employee who, together with her husband, had 2 6-year-old children at school. They relocated south of Sydney, which meant that they were both the parents effectively 2 hours away from the corporate office, which was based in Cogra. So they were somewhere near Bowral and the kids were attending school there. Miss Chandler, the applicant, she was the primary carer. So the issue for her was, well, we've made the decision to move, but you've now got this hybrid policy, Westpac, and the hybrid policy requires 2 days. They were arguing, Westpac, at the corporate office, so 2 physical days in attendance at the corporate office. Now, the nearest corporate office was either Cogra or Parramatta, in the complete opposite direction to where they'd relocated. So Ms. Chandler made 2 suggestions. The initial one was, I'd like to work from home. I think I mentioned she had a long-standing history of doing so. Mm. And they came back and, well, they didn't really comply with the National Employment Standards, the procedural requirements. They didn't even respond within the 20-day period. But in their response, fundamental things like they didn't consider her circumstances, they didn't try and negotiate with her. Later on, they kind of try and meet an agreement with her, but only after they had already refused the request. And furthermore, they didn't really provide reasons at that point as to why they felt, on reasonable business grounds, that, you know, they couldn't grant the request.
Procedurally, there was an issue. So how much does this decision turn on this specific facts and the fact that they didn't follow procedure, and what can we actually learn from it for the future?
Okay, well, I mean, there's 2 major things here. The first one is that you've really got to have your systems in place. So Westpac is a major organisation spread across the country. And, you know, to be fair, 21 days is pretty onerous for an employer. But if you've got your systems in place to ensure that you're meeting those requirements, so the 21 days, genuinely trying to agree, and considering also the detriment to the employee if you refuse, so they're the procedural things. And then also in your response, if you're going to refuse, you've really got to detail the reasons why you're refusing on those reasonable business grounds, and you've got to have evidence to back that up. So they're the essential lessons, I think. You've got to get not your act together, but you've really got to substantiate your position as an employer. You asked whether it turns on the particular position. Mm. Certainly it does. So these cases need to be dealt with. This is, I guess, the further lesson on their merits on an individual basis. You can't just have a hybrid policy and say, you know, we're really well-intentioned because we do allow hybrid work. these standards, they say when you've got somebody who's a carer, for example, or somebody with a disability, you need to treat their circumstances individually vis-a-vis the nature of the job.
And Giuseppe, what would the arguments in favour of Ms Chandler being able to have her request to work from home allowed?
Well, in the end, it was really fascinating because the employer was in a bit of a bind because not only did they not adduce, they didn't present the evidence to her, so that was going to be an issue in refusing the application. But even before the commission, they didn't have concrete enough evidence. And one of the sticking factors for them was that, look, she and her team had successfully performed this role. And the deputy president said, there is no question that this role and this team function effectively, looking at the evidence, looking at KPI indicators and looking at, you know, performance outcomes. This job can be done remotely. So we're actually going to go that way.
Because she'd actually been doing it for quite a long period remotely before.
Successfully, yes.
And the caring part, how important was the type of carer she was and the fact that her husband, as I understand it, he had to travel around a lot, so he couldn't really help.
Yeah, so if the employer can adduce evidence or if they can come to some sort of accommodation where they say, well, if your partner or someone else in your household can also act as a carer, then we, you know, we're only employing you. We don't necessarily have to give you, this broader. So that was a big factor here because her partner was not able to act as a carer, and that was clearly established through the evidence given the nature of his job, roaming around the country, et cetera. He couldn't be there to pick up and drop off the kids and he couldn't care for them.
And then I'd love to go to the reasonable business grounds because this was argued by Westpac unsuccessfully. So what are reasonable business grounds?
The requirements are costs, and this all depends on, you know, things like the nature and the size of your organisation, whether there's a capacity or no capacity to actually change the working arrangements because you can't accommodate the individual employee given the inconvenience to other workers, etc., and to the way they work, the improbability of hiring new employees if it comes to that. The last two were the ones that Westpac focused on before the commission, so in the evidence, and they are these. The likely significant impact on productivity, so adverse impact on productivity, if you grant the request, so operative word there, significant impact, and then finally, the likely significant impact on customer service.
Giuseppe, what does the employee need to prove when putting together their argument for flexible working conditions?
The most important thing, Lisa, is that there needs to be what the Fair Work Commission calls a nexus. So the employee needs to establish a nexus. In other words, there needs to be a link between the request and the employee's particular circumstances, say disability or carer status. And I've seen employees trip up there. So we had one chap who similarly moved to another location, requested a work from home arrangement, and he was knocked back because the commission said, well, look, you're saying you're a carer because you and your wife, your partner have kids, but your carer responsibilities don't come up in your span of hours. So you haven't established that link.
And now flipping it to the employer's perspective. So what would employers need to do and learn from this case?
A lot. So as I said earlier, they need to ensure that they have a system in place. So they need to, these cases need to be dealt with individually, but they need to ensure that they have staff lined up to deal with these requests, that the lines of communication are clear, that they respond within the 21 days, that they follow all of the requirements, including if you're going to reject or refuse, you've got to factor in the detriment to the employee. And your response needs to be detailed and clear, showing that you've gone through the steps. And if you, again, if you're refusing, you've got to substantiate your significant losses that you are claiming on efficiency, productivity, or customer service, or one of those other bases.
the AFR reported the Finance Sector Union has plans to review members' work from home requests that were previously rejected and consider taking them to the Fair Work Commission. Giuseppe, I'd love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, very interesting, really interesting, because as far as I can tell, there is no, unlike, say, unfair dismissal, there's no firm deadline for these things.
Mm.
So if they've come back and rejected and they've done it on a similar basis, they will scrutinise those particular rejections, you know, based on the job, based on all these factors that we've spoken about. And if there is an avenue there to pick either a procedural breach or, you know, there's not enough evidence on reasonable business grounds, we could see a bit of a queue. I don't think it's as dramatic as people are saying, but I don't have the figures from public information. I don't know. But, yeah, that will be really interesting, and we could see a few more of these reach the commission.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong. I've been speaking with Dr. Giuseppe Carabetta, Associate Professor of Workplace and Business Law at UTS Business School. Listening in also is Emma Walsh, CEO of Parents at Work. They work with employers to implement family-friendly workplaces and practices. Emma, hello.
Hi, Lisa. Great to be with you.
Emma, what's your response to this decision?
I think the key thing here is the case makes, I think, unmistakably clear, and Giuseppe said that flexible work cannot be administered by blanket rules. And I think there are a lot of organisations that have put in return to work mandates where they require people coming back into the office, as did this employer, and in doing so aren't properly looking at the individual cases. So when a request is linked to care in particular, as we heard, employers are expected to demonstrate case-by-case consideration, a genuine effort to consult, and rationale grounded in the employee's actual circumstances, which didn't happen in this case, and not generic assumptions as to how and where work gets done. So I think this blanket mandates for office returns is totally under pressure. And I do expect that we will see more cases come to light.
Emma, what are the wider implications of a decision like this?
We know work and care needs across Australia is rising. We've got a rapidly ageing nation, and care needs are expected to sharply rise in the next decade and beyond. And it's going to impact the demand for flexibility and employers' ability as well to attract and retain staff. So this case is so interesting in so many levels, and it has a broader, broader impact on how we think about work and care is going to be balanced and managed by both employee and employer long term. But compounding that, we've got families under intense cost of living pressures still, and people just can't afford to live near their offices. And that means often costly commutes and lengthy commutes. And something needs to give if we want Australia to continue to be a productive and growing nation. And we know we've got a productivity problem. And really that means employers need to be much more vigilant in understanding caregiving and flexible work needs of their people, and to think about how they're going to remove barriers to ensure their people can do their best work. And I think that's just one of the most interesting parts to this case, or confounding parts to this case. As an employer, I want to make sure my people are as productive and effective as possible doing their best work. And I know that means taking into account their work and home life needs. And I think the last thing our economy or society needs is to really indulge in a culture war argument on whether work from home is a right or a privilege. And I think we're at risk of that if we're not careful. And in doing so, we really, I think, risk our GDP going backwards. Access to flexible work isn't an employee perk. It's a critical lever for productivity and driving economic strength. And I think there's lots of research that suggests that too. And so instead, we need to consider investment and access to all forms of flexible work as a business productivity driver, good for engagement, good for health and well-being, and good for gender equality outcomes.
Westpac's obviously a huge organisation, but I know that you're a small business owner. What do you make of this type of decision for small business owners who already feel under the pump in terms of red tape and trying to make ends meet?
Yes, I do understand that as a small business. And we have about 12 employees, and the care needs of that workforce, our workforce, is great. And I know as an employer that the best thing to get the best, you know, work out of the people and the team is to make sure that I'm looking at ways to make them productive. How do we remove barriers that may be preventing them from being able to do their best work? Because I know, and I'm a working parent too, that life's messy, right? It's not predictable. Caring needs go up and down like a yo-yo in many households. And for some of us, we don't know when caring needs are really going to blindside us. And so I don't think this is a minority issue. I think that at one stage in our lifetime, we're all going to probably care for someone else or we'll need caring for by someone who's working. And so how do I, as an employer, rise to meet those needs? I can't ignore that they're a reality. It's in my best interest as an employer to make sure that I facilitate work, how it's done, where it's done, to be as easy as possible for employees to do their best work.
Emma, are you concerned this decision could make businesses wary of providing flexible conditions to parents and carers in the future?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we do have anti-discrimination laws that have been in place for decades around carers and caring discrimination. So in many ways, this shouldn't have been a surprise to the employer that there was going to be an intersection between what Fair Work Act says, but also what broader anti-discrimination acts also require. So this is not, in many ways, new. It's more that it's been shown that this is what employers really should be doing, and this employer's been caught out in not following that due process. So I think what it is an opportunity for employers to have a look at their flexible work policies, make sure they're just exactly that, they're flexible, because we need them to be agile for our own business sake, but also for our people's sake. So I don't see that being an issue because this is just not going to go away as an issue as all Australians face caregiving issues into the future.
Giuseppe, what are your thoughts on how businesses might respond to this Fair Work decision?
That's a tough one. I think there is a risk. I mean, I respectfully agree with Emma's comments that there is a risk here that, taking carers out of the equation for a moment, in a more general sense, we've still got work from home in the rear window because of the pandemic, but as Emma said, there is depending on the service, the industry or the sector, there are these return to the office mandates. And in that general sphere, there might be, because of the way this decision was decided, there might be a general reluctance on not the model employers but others to offer work from home arrangements more generally, because they may fear that it might come back to bite them. Let's say you've got somebody who's not a carer at the moment and they have general access. We might see it in Victoria, though there are issues there constitutionally, but we might see it through the changes that are being proposed for the Clarke's Award as well. So this more universalised access to flexible work, and in particular working from home arrangements. If you've got somebody in that realm and then they then become a carer later down the track, they might try and argue, well, look, I've been doing this job just as Ms. Chandler did successfully here. I've been doing it, and I've been performing and my team's been performing, so how can you turn around now and say that you've got reasonable business grounds to knock my application back?
So, Giuseppe, we did reach out to the Business Council of Australia for comment ahead of this story, but we didn't hear back before our deadline. So, from a business point of view, is there too much regulation for organisations to comply with here? Is it getting in the way of getting work done?
Look, I'd like to say, for a big organisation, Emma will like this, there's no excuse. There can't be any excuse. As a labour law specialist, I often say, look, if you're struggling to comply with this stuff, I'm sure you don't struggle with the tax side of it. You have an in-house legal team. You have HR people. The problem here is, though, that, as I said again, And this is my perspective, not only from my ivory tower as an academic, but actually, as a consultant as well. There seems to be that these decisions have been made by line managers. You know, you've got 21 days, et cetera. And so there might be a communication problem even for large organisations. But I'll get to your question. For a small organisation like Emma's or like the many restaurants or, small businesses in my local area, do they struggle with regulation? Absolutely no question. Absolutely no question. And the phone calls that I get are consistent and constant. I will qualify that, though, Lisa, by saying that the Act does factor in when they're looking at reasonable business grounds as a potential defence. There is actually an explanatory note that says that this will depend on the size and nature of, you know, your undertaking or your workplace. So there is that. They are trying to, make it less onerous for, say, a small business. So I'll say that.
Giuseppe, the Victorian government is planning to legislate a right to work from home 2 days a week and have surveyed workers about it. It seems a pretty popular idea. So do you think this is necessary given that there's already legislation covering it?
Well, we don't know what Victoria is going to do. They're going to have a real battle constitutionally unless they differentiate from the National Employment Standards or the NES in the Federal Act because of the way our laws operate, so federal over state constitutionally. So they will probably look to do something broader. Politically, I think it's fantastic. The Premier has certainly picked up on what happened at the federal election and picking up on sentiment, but illegally, it's tricky. Practically, is it needed? Well, we'll be looking at something like, I guess, what we've got at the in the federal public service, where there's broader access. You don't need to be a carer, etc. But I like what we're seeing with the protected categories because the idea there is to accommodate these protected groups, and that is consistent with anti-discrimination law. And anti-discrimination law is all about not using irrelevant characteristics against a person. So in the end, it's not only about equity, it's about making sure that you've got the most productive workers because you're not basing your decisions on characteristics that are not relevant.
Finally, Emma, what would you like employers to know about family-friendly workplaces?
The Family Friendly Workplaces initiative and program was started just after COVID, and it was designed to provide employers with a voluntary set of standards around what good looks like when it comes to managing care and work policy. So flexible work policy, parental leave policy, caregiving more widely policies and wellbeing policies, and really seeing them as a lever for building a caring workforce. So the Family Friendly Workplaces initiative is really about setting some standards. We provide employers with a set of standards around what good looks like, and we encourage organisations to benchmark themselves against their current policies against these set of standards so they have an idea as to where their gaps lie and can start to pinpoint where they might need to improve. And that's a free service that's been supported by the federal government to help educate employers. So I would really encourage employers to get on it and benchmark where they're at to avoid situations like this that we've just been talking about today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you, Giuseppe.
Thanks, Lisa. It was great fun.
Dr. Giuseppe Carabetta is an Associate Professor of Workplace and Business Law with UTS Business School. And Emma Walsh is the CEO of Parents at Work. My LinkedIn post about this topic prompted Ian to write, "My perspective is people should be trusted to decide when and where they do their best work. And if that trust isn't there, it says more about the culture than the individuals." And if you have tips on this topic, find me on LinkedIn or email us at thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Thanks for listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Tim James on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. If you like what you heard, subscribe to our podcast and share it with a colleague or a friend. You can do that on the ABC Listen app or anywhere you listen to podcasts. I'm Lisa Leong. Until next time, work it like a charm. We'll be right back.
been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.